Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, in was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's weekly Nintendo show. I'm your host, Zach Ryan, and I'm joined today by four folks who are definitely on my friends list. Per Schneider.
Hello, Zach.
Tom Marks.
Hello.
It's been a while, Tom. How you been?
It's been good.
Good. And Casey DeFreitas.
Hello.
Casey, what's up?
Hi.
Hey, Zach.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Brian.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
Where's Brian?
Brian's in New Jersey with, he took Babby over there to show his family. Yeah.
Nice.
Babby's about the age where you take him over there and show them off.
Showing Babby where Brian was originally formed.
That's right. So Brian won't be with us today, except for in our hearts.
Aww.
A lot of stuff that we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about some sales, numbers from,
Exciting.
Nintendo News. I know. Yeah. I had this conversation with you yesterday a little bit, but I was like, I'm tired of talking about sales on this show, but when the news is this big and when it's this good, I feel like there's probably
pretty
plenty
good
of
news,
room.
Right?
Plenty of room to have those kinds of conversations. So, we're going to talk a little bit about that. We got some news about some new tournaments that are coming along. and then of course, we had that weird non-direct this morning out of Nintendo
an
UK.
An indirect?
Yeah.
A Nintendo indirect.
As a matter of fact, yeah, that's what we're going to call it, the indirect.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go ahead and get started? Well, hang on. I'm going a little fast because before we get started, I want to ask everybody how they're doing. What's new in your life? How are your two dogs?
Doing fine. The rain has stopped, which means they no longer threaten to pee and poop in the house.
Good.
That's good.
That's good.
That's good news.
Tom, anybody peeing and pooping in your house?
No one that shouldn't be.
Great.
Okay.
I guess
that you know of.
Yeah, yeah, that I know of. No, mm-hmm. No, we're good.
That's
we got
good.
Little mice traps put up and nothing came back. So, you know.
That's great.
Nice. Hoop Casey, free. what about you?
The heavy rains have brought flooding into my house. But just enough for it to be slightly annoying, but not enough to warrant leaving. So everything's just been real moist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Congrats.
Gross word. Moving on. First topic. Sales for the Switch are absolutely nuts, and I wanted to dive into that, but I didn't want to bury the lead. Let's get this out of the way right from the beginning. These numbers come from NPD, sort of their year-end wrap-up, and first and foremost, we're going to lead with this. For the first time since 2009, Nintendo is the highest software revenue-generating publisher of the year.
That means
10 years.
Wow.
A whole decade that Nintendo hasn't been in the number one spot.
Yep.
Now they come roaring back.
So back to the Wii age.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good for them. I mean, they took a chance by merging their console and handheld lines with a Switch, and it's paying off now. That's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah.
It's especially impressive in a year that we've kind of been like, 2018 was a little lighter for Nintendo first party stuff. And it's like, no, they're just,
I mean,
just
I
killing
was
it.
Excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's actually, I mean, it's very rare that the first year of a console's launch is the most successful year. Usually,
right.
console business grows over time as the library
right.
grows and marketing goes up. You know, year two, year three is often bigger than year two and so forth. And so, it's good to see that trend holds true for the Switch. It means that it is a vibrant platform that's growing, right?
Yeah, and to Tom's point, it's interesting that the Switch managed to do so in a year where they didn't have
right.
a Zelda and a Mario, and you know, their major hitters weren't well, with the exception of Smash, I suppose.
Smash is a pretty big hit.
Smash and Pokemon are pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But they were loaded to the back end of the year, and that's you know, December obviously was a very successful month for them.
I know plenty of people who went and bought a Switch just to play Smash.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
So many. I know people who had got the Switch at launch, played Zelda, and then immediately sold it, and then went and rebought one just for Smash.
Well, and to its credit, Pokemon hit harder than I thought it was going to. Mm-hmm. Like, no disrespect to Let's Go. I just didn't expect that game to light a fire under people.
I was in the same boat as you. As sort of a reboot, remake situation, I didn't expect people to glom onto it as much as they did.
Yeah.
So.
Which is cool to see that they did, because it was a really great game.
Yeah.
So this is obviously NPD tracks data in the US, right? Mm-hmm. So it's based on US sales. In Japan, the Switch has also been doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the PlayStation, it's consistently up there in the charts. All the new games are performing pretty well there. So it's looking pretty good.
I know, like Tales of Vesperia had most sales
right.
on the Switch compared to all the other consoles.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I guess maybe because people with the Nintendo console hadn't ever had a console to play it on.
Yeah, before. I mean, we've seen that a bunch now, especially with indie games that were previously on mobile or like Steam platform, something like that, in that they'll come to the Switch and just sell just insane amounts because people are just looking for new stuff to play. And I think Vesperia is in a really good spot because it's a renowned JRPG that maybe not a ton of people had an opportunity to play, and now it's available for the Switch. So,
well, also there's a lot of, I feel like the Tales series has some latent Nintendo fans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause,
yeah, cause Symphonia
was what I remember playing. It was a Nintendo game,
yeah.
right? I mean, not literally, but it
was,
I played it on GameCube.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the fence. I had some real deliberation about, Tales because I've heard it's great. I'm always in the mood for a JRPG, but I don't ever have the time to commit to get to the end.
Yeah.
And I had it in my cart in the eShop where I was like hovering over the purchase button. I was like, I don't know if I should do it.
I've done that with Civilization a couple of times.
Yeah.
And in my cart, I'm like, I already own this on PC. Do I really want it? And then I decided against it.
So there we go. Nintendo number one publisher. Let's give them a polite golf clap. Excellent work. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is the best-selling game of December 2018 and the fifth best-selling game overall of 2018, despite digital sales not currently being tracked by the NPD
Whoa.
Group. Package software launch month dollars of sales of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate exceeded those of the previous best in franchise history, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, by over 70%.
Damn.
So when you say that Smash is a pretty heavy hitter, there is no hyperbole there. It's a big time deal, this iteration. So
that's pretty awesome. I mean, it doesn't take much to take December, honestly, because December usually doesn't see the highest profile releases. Those hit in November.
Oh, you really just rained on our parade
here,
Pear.
But that doesn't mean that a game like Call of Duty or Red Dead Redemption, by the way, Red Dead Redemption 2 was the top selling game
of 2018
of the year, which is amazing. Like it unseated
Coming
Call
in
of Duty
at the very end of October.
Yeah. But you know, obviously those games continue to sell into December. So
you know, when I first read this, I read I assume they're talking about Super Smash for the Wii U. The fact that it sold 70% more than Brawl, yeah. which was on the Wii, yeah, right. is insane.
That's great.
Yeah, it's really wild. Speaking of Smash, Super Smash Ultimate sets a new launch month dollar sales record for a platform exclusive in video game history, exceeding the launch month dollar sales of 2010's Halo Reach. Hmm. Yeah, big deal.
Halo Reach held that?
Yeah. yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's more surprising to me than Smash Bros.
You know what held it before that?
What?
ODST.
Actually?
Wait, no. no.
No, but
wait a minute.
But remember, for again, like to put it into context, that's launch month dollars. So
at the
start of a console's life cycle, the install base is small. So the first Halo is not going to sell as well in the launch month as, you know, the one that comes out 4 years into the console's life cycle. So, yeah. I mean, that I'm really curious to see what that means for the next Zelda or the next Mario game.
Yeah.
Will we see something that beats these numbers? Or is Smash just so universally big because it has all these characters from every franchise in it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, also, that's the question of if we do get another, like, Zelda, they don't really do multiple mainline games on a system often.
Stop being mean.
But maybe we'll see the 3DS stuff coming over, right?
Like, well, I'd like to think that the Switch is like the N64, and we got our Ocarina of Time, and we're going to get our Majora's Mask.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. And then we get Skyward Sword,
also,
whether you want it or not.
Also, I'd beg to differ because they did mainline entries, multiple mainline entries on 64, on GameCube. On Wii.
GameCube was a cheat.
I usually forget.
Yeah,
was
GameCube
on DS.
Yeah.
And
what was the Wii? Okay, so
Skyward Sword and Twilight Princess.
So like that's the
but Twilight
ones
Princess
I'm not counting are the ones
GameCube.
That are like right, that's what I'm saying.
It's on both platforms.
So Twilight
the
ones that are for both.
Both. I'm like, yeah. I don't know. It's cheating.
But Breath of the Wild wasn't.
You're right.
I'd like to introduce
you do multiple.
Yeah. I'd like to introduce a new segment to the show called Zach is Right. It's, moving on.
We do that segment every week.
Good jingle. Yeah. Nintendo Switch ends 2018 as the year's best-selling hardware platform in both units and dollars. Annual unit and dollar sales of Nintendo Switch are the highest annual total for any hardware platform since the PlayStation 4 in 2015. Look, this is a very fancy way of saying Nintendo is making a ton of money this year. So kudos to them for just killing it on the hardware and software fronts. Perry, you had something to say there.
No, more money in the bank means more money invested in development. Good. Mm-hmm.
The end.
Give us more games.
Great.
Thank you.
And lastly, here from the NPD friends, Nintendo Switch generated the highest December month hardware dollar sales for a single platform since Nintendo Wii in December 2009 and achieved the highest December unit sales for a single platform since December 2010. So double record breaker, breaking their own record in this month. Yeah.
What happened in December 2009 for the Wii? Let's smash.
How do you ask a question?
I'm sorry. We don't know. We don't know the answer to that question.
It's impossible to know.
You'll find it out.
I barely remember what I had for lunch, let alone what came out in December of 2009.
I had water.
Yeah.
It was probably a big month.
Here we go. Thank you very much. So kudos to Nintendo. Great sales. Good folks. You know, that's what I always say.
Yay,
great
Nintendo.
Sales and good folks.
Clear eyes, full hearts.
That's right. Can't lose. Now we got a couple of news items here for some tournaments coming down the line. Smash and Splatoon 2 tournaments are coming. Smash has seen a few scattered tournaments here and there. I feel like these are the first major tournaments that are coming down the line. So that's really exciting. We are looking at the North American Open 2019 and the European Smash Ball Team Cup 2019. North American Open will split up the United States, Canada, and Mexico into four regions for qualifiers. These qualifying rounds and their subsequent final rounds will be held online, with the first beginning February 2nd at 9 a.m. and the final event at PAX East in Boston on March 30th. So my question to you is, since they are online competitions, mm-hmm. will you be participating? Are you going to get in there? See how far you go?
I hate playing Smash Online.
Oh, really?
But that's not what's keeping you from it.
What's keeping me from doing it is I would get destroyed.
Exactly.
Aren't you curious to see how far you could go, though?
I'm not curious.
Don't you want
to
be the very best like no one ever was?
I really don't have that desire.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, I'm good being mediocre and knowing
it. Tom wants to be the very okayest.
Yeah. I feel like I hold that title pretty all right.
But okay. I'd love to hear if we have any NVC listeners or viewers who are going to participate. Let's hear your stories from those who got through and those who didn't get in because they're online disconnected.
I challenge everyone on this panel to get in there, get in the tournament,
okay,
and then
we
can talk about, we don't necessarily need to win, but we can talk about how far we got and how we felt about it and whether or not our systems lagged, and it'll be great.
I'll just put my money on Mitchell and he can run for
it. Okay, there we go.
We'll just put him, he's the horse in our race.
Yeah.
We'll put him. Represent IGN.
It would be so funny if Mitchell was actually a horse.
And then Emeka and Adops has that fancy big Smash controller, the $200 box.
Emeka is crazy good at Smash.
So let's, when we put a camera on Emeka and see if he makes it. There we go. Perfect. He'll be my player.
Okay.
Playing as me.
Oh, online. Trial by combat.
Yeah, it'll be pair IGN.
Choose a champion.
Like, this guy's really good. Then you'll show up.
Nicely done.
You'll be like, that's not him.
The European one has a team event.
Yeah, so I actually think the European one sounds kind of cooler. The European, as most things in Europe.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, that's right. The European Smash Ball Team Cup will see teams of three battle across stock matches, with the only item activated being the Smash Ball. In a series of best of five matches, teams will partake in 2v2 Smash, Smashdown, and 3v3 Squad Strike match types. So I think that's a little more fun than just straightforward, just getting in there, chopping it up. Yeah. I like the idea of that, like, you got to get through with a team.
Well, I saw a tournament also just recently, and not like a Nintendo-sponsored one, just a some tournament that was on Twitch where they were doing a Smash Strike style or Squad Strike style match.
Okay.
Where it was three stock, but every stock was a different character. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see those tools actually being utilized in a semi-competitive way. Obviously, the 1v1, you get your character, you go in, no items, is going to be the standard, and that should be kind of like considered the peak of competitive play.
Yeah.
But I love that Nintendo is encouraging people to have a little more fun with it and encouraging these sort of off-the-wall sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like it.
Very good stuff. Great. Those are two great.
That's a show.
Those are two great tournaments.
That's a show. That's
for
all
you.
The show
oh, no. Just kidding. We have another tournament that I actually didn't put any notes in for.
Oh, Splatoon.
So there's a Splatoon tournament. Hmm. Hey, Splatoon's still going strong, huh?
Splatoon 2, specifically.
I feel bad. I haven't booted it up in such a long time.
Well, good news for you. Now there's a tournament to jump in.
Okay, I will definitely participate in this tournament because I'm so qualified.
Look, I encourage this panel to jump into the tournament. See
I'm
how far you get.
I'm not very good at Splatoon.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not very good at it.
Pear's actually very good at Splatoon. Well, in the matches that you and I played back when it came out.
But you got to keep playing.
Yeah,
otherwise, it's like you just, you know.
You know who is really good at Splatoon? Brendan.
Brendan is very good.
You know who's very good at every single game ever made?
Brendan
Graber.
Yes. All right.
Speaking of games and being very good at them, let's talk a little bit about what we're playing this week. Yeah, I know, right? Thank you. Pear, why don't you kick us off? You have the most on this list, so... tell us about it.
Let me
what
just
got,
hold on. Let me boot up my my Switch.
Well,
which
it's right there in your notes.
Every week, there are just so many new games, and we can't get to all of them. I finally finished Greece, which I thought was just lovely.
It's great,
I think it's really charming. The Last World is really cool. So I played Apocalypsis, which is this new adventure game, almost like a classic point-and-click adventure game done in the style of, like, I don't know, like medieval European etchings, like something like Dura would make. And it's got a kind of like this dark, morbid style to it. Gameplay-wise, very much classic adventure where you go, you know, you kind of have to think around corners sometimes, like, what can I use this item for? Mm-hmm. But just that kind of like pestilence, morbid middle age kind of setup, I think makes it very unique.
Yeah, I mean, the opening scene is real morbid.
Yeah.
And just, man.
Yeah,
just,
some
dark.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It really surprised me with what happened in that very first scene.
That's wild.
Yeah, but it's one of those games where it's like, it's fun to play just to see the art, right?
It looks
like going
really,
to a museum
really cool.
And look at it. I think gameplay wise, it's not going to blow you away with great interface or, you know, really kind of like the most clever puzzles. It's fun. But it's the art style that you show up for. And then, I played this game that only I can pronounce, which is Achtung Cthulhu Tactics.
Okay.
I know tactics is a very difficult word to pronounce, so I did that for you. Achtung is German, means attention, right? Mm-hmm. Like warning. And this is actually, if you've ever played, Full Spectrum Warrior, the old THQ game, a little bit like, you know, like XCOM, a turn-based strategy game played from an overhead perspective. These are actually the Switch graphics. It looks quite nice on the machine. And you have a tactical team that you have to deploy. You have to tell your soldiers where to go. You have AP points that limit how far you can move, or whether you kind of divide between movement and shooting or an action. And then the kick is you fight Nazis, hence the Achtung, and you fight evil squid monsters, hence the Cthulhu from the Lovecraft.
It's pretty on the nose there, huh?
Yeah, it's a very strange mix, but it's nicely done.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a quality game. If you are into kind of like that more like slow paced turn based gameplay, which I know you love.
It's my fave.
Mr. Zach Ryan.
It kind of
it's my fave. That's what I'm here
just
for.
Watching the gameplay is kind of reminding me of Valkyria Chronicles.
I do love Valkyria Chronicles, so
yeah.
You don't get many tactics games set in that period either. Yeah. Valkyria is
it's like an alternate World War II history. Yeah, is it World War I?
It's World War II.
Okay.
And yeah, you don't get many tactics games in that style, those old school weapons. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in that regard.
And then two more games just quickly. Downwell, which is kind of like an 8-bit game where you're constantly falling,
mm-hmm.
and the recoil from your gun makes you fall a little slower, and you have to shoot enemies that are below you, and you collect different power ups. It's just it feels really tight. It's like a really good feeling game, like a Celeste where mm-hmm. if you die, it was really your fault.
Yeah.
And then with a different gameplay hook where you constantly go down.
It's got a very cool look to it too.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's very fast, really demands your full attention. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Real quick on download, can you play it in vertical mode? Do you know?
Yes, you can.
Cool.
Yeah. I believe
because it's very much like a phone shaped game.
Yeah, actually, I got to double check that. Okay. I think Sam said you can use the. I don't have the flip grip thing. I was too late. I'll order it when they're back in stock. Pixel Colors is on the opposite end of the spectrum, so this is more of a Picross like game. They remixed the rules a little bit. Yeah, I do like.
Oh,
the
you
Picross.
Like Picross?
So you know, kind of a relaxing puzzle game where you have to figure out where the shapes are on a grid. The hook with this one is that you can switch between multiple paint buckets.
Yeah.
One thing, you know, and it's fun and it kind of fills the gap. But one thing, a lot of these Picross clones. Don't feel as good as the original Picross. Yep. There's a slight delay when you move your cursor, you know, like it doesn't feel as snappy, and you really appreciate what Jupiter does with the core Picross games. But it's a fun game. It's a good game. It'll bridge that gap for the next one.
Very cool. That's a lot of games. Congratulations.
Yeah. I did play a lot last week.
You did good work.
Tomb Raider too. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I almost started Tomb Raider last night, as a matter of fact.
It's good. It's all about the challenged dungeons, man. The tombs.
I finished Guacamelee.
Okay.
Which is a platformer that
I barely started it.
I cannot say enough about that game. Awesome. I know we've talked about it quite a bit here on the show, but it's brilliant. I love the original Guacamelee. This is a better game. The combat meets traversal sort of mashup in this game is so fun and so challenging and so rewarding, and it's funny, but not in a way that is like sort of derivative like the first game. And some of the stuff, like you walk into these challenge rooms and your first thought is, I have no idea how I'm going to do this. And then within like one or two trials, you have it parsed out, you know? So like it's a great game. And if you love Metroidvania, if you love a 2D platformer, like I highly recommend. I also got back into Luminas this week, which is, I mean, you can't go wrong with Luminas ever.
Yeah, it's really good.
I also have played Donut County.
Oh.
Which Donut County is delightful.
I played it on mobile.
Love it.
Switch version.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Very, very good. And then finally I played, a little tiny bit of Travis Strikes Back.
Okay.
Which you reviewed for us.
I did not.
Oh, is that not true?
I thought you did.
I'm sorry.
I edited the review.
I thought you did review it for us. Maybe I was just talking to you about the review.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably that.
that game is fine.
Yeah, that's kind of what editing the review led me to believe as well.
Yeah, I think we gave it a 6.5, if I remember correctly.
It's okay, on our scale,
Yeah, and I would love for them to make No More Heroes 3, because I really like those two games, and I like Suda's games, but this one sort of feels to me like they are just kind of twiddling their thumbs while they wait for that opportunity. So, mm-hmm. Remains to be seen.
I might stick
with it. I might give it up. I'm not sure yet.
It's like what the original Raving Rabbits was to a Rayman game,
yeah.
Right? It's like you get kind of like a spin-off minigame collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has some good parts, but overall.
Yeah. You're playing it too?
Yeah, barely.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I've just barely scratched the surface.
I really like I have to think about whether I'm going to keep doing it. Like,
yeah,
it
me
has
too.
Hooked me.
Yeah.
I have heard that the Suda stuff in it is very Suda-y in a very good way.
Yeah. Well, regardless, thank you for your review. And please to talk about the games that you've been playing.
One of them is actually a similar thing to Pear, which is my kind of go-to train game now is this game called Pick-A-Pix Deluxe, which is a similar thing where it's like a Picross ripoff that is colors. And it's, I was going to say literally exactly what you said, which is every Picross ripoff is, and I don't say ripoff as like a mean thing because I will always play more Picross pretty much forever. But everyone feels like not quite as polished, not quite as refined as what Jupiter does. And it's really funny to be like, man, Jupiter makes the best Picross game. But it's like, actually, they kind of just do.
It's funny, though, because I played this, too. I like the color hook. It works, right? The kind of it gives you a little bit more to think about, a little bit more strategy. But, yeah, could it just be as snappy? And could the – like when you get one of the bigger grids, they're too small on the screen. And
yeah,
like,
it gets a little hard to read.
Yep. It hurts my brain just to look at.
Another thing I played through – over like the last 2 weeks or so was Pikuniku,
which comes out tomorrow, right?
Comes out tomorrow.
Okay, which is Thursday.
Nobody knows. It's impossible to know.
Today.
Comes out at some point soon. Yes. Pikuniku is this really silly, weird game. Reminded me of Donut County, actually, not in gameplay, but in it's telling a sort of more socially minded tale through an absurd situation,
right?
Like this, like the whole plot has these undertones of like corporations taking over the world and like stripping the world of resources, but it's told in this very silly way.
And the writing is really funny.
The writing is the draw. The writing is really the reason this game, I enjoyed this game, and the reason I played it through to completion is that it's really silly and the jokes are really good and the situations you find yourself are very, very silly. Mm-hmm. The actual platforming playing of it is like kind of just good. Like, it's fine. It's not overly impressive.
Yeah.
But yeah, the personality here is, and I feel like that's the same thing with Donut County, right? Donut County is like, the actual whole thing is like, it's okay. It's not like overly amusing, but that's not like the point of that game.
Donut County gets a little more interesting in later levels in that there are objectives that you can accomplish with the hole where like you'll swallow a fire pit and then smoke will rise out of the hole and then you can use that to elevate a balloon to complete objectives.
And that's kind of
little
bit of
this. So it's like very gradual, but it's none of them are brain busters. Like,
So this is like,
I love the way that little guy moves.
I love
his
leg kicking. It's so good.
Very good.
Another thing about Pikuniku, it has a co-op mode, but it's separate from the campaign.
Okay.
So it's like just a little thing.
Look at him go. Love that guy.
Yeah, he's cute.
Tom recommends.
He's a little red guy with long legs, and he just kicked a rock, and that's what we all
He's very physics-y. His jumping is very physics-y.
Now, I'm going to veto Persona 5 Talk because we are running a little bit long.
That's fair.
Persona 5, I think we can unanimously agree it's a pretty great game.
Yeah. Literally only been playing it because I want to see Joker for Smash, and now I'm in love with the game.
It's oozes. Everything is so stylish. The menus, everything is so wonderful.
Not coming to Switch, though. So, no. Casey, you tell us what you're playing.
Not yet.
So I've been playing a game for a wiki that I can't talk about, but that's been occupying most of my time. And
do you hearts it?
Really? Huh?
Do you hearts this game?
I've been liking it.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Would you say that
Zach? I can't. I don't think okay.
Love for this game could fill a kingdom.
If you guys are watching this, you'll know in a couple of hours anyway. Okay. But and I have been playing some Just Dance still because I can tell myself, well, I want to play another game, and I can say I can play Just Dance and be like, it's because of exercise. So it's not it's, you know.
Do you ever bring your Switch with you to parties and just out the moves?
Funny you say that, because I was playing D&D with some friends and I brought Just Dance over, and when we finished with D&D,
two things are not connected.
I know. Well,
you'd be surprised
D&D.
At how much they're connected given who I know from your group. They are very connected, yeah.
Well, we finished at 1 o'clock in the morning and then played Just Dance until 3.
Are you kidding me?
It was
there
a good time.
Go. We I thought those were lives. Two streams that could not be crossed. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I also put in a few hours into Tales of Vesperia before I got this game that I'm working on for the wiki, and I'm really enjoying it. The first, the tutorial section where it kind of teaches you how to fight, I did not think I was going to like the combat, but as soon as I got more party members and started learning more attacks, I started really enjoying it a lot more.
Man,
and the story is good, and they added voice acting.
This game looks really good. I might get it.
I'm really liking it.
When are you going to play this?
I don't know.
I don't know. Play Resident Evil?
I also heard it's like 80 hours long.
Oh, God.
Sounds about right. Tracks. Does this one have co-op combat as well?
Yes.
Cool.
I haven't tried it yet, though.
Ooh.
But yes, it does.
You can play with your friend.
And also you get this cool...
Just brutal.
Right off the start, you get Rapide, who is this really cool dog with a spiky tail and a scar, and he has a tobacco pipe, and he's cool.
I'll have you know, Mr. Schneider, that I have several friends.
All right.
Several friends.
Guys, right. There's a doggo with a pipe, please.
Yeah, I know. Focus. I love him.
Good doggo. He steals stuff for us.
Casey, you also wanted to talk about another game out this week. We talked a little bit about Pick-A-Picks, but you wanted to talk about Smite specifically.
Yeah. Because Smite also comes out this week, and Smite originally came out in 2014, and it's like an action third-person MOBA made by Hi-Rez, you might know from Paladins. And
I do know them from Paladins.
I know, and more recently, Realm Royale.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Have you ever played Smite, Tom?
I installed Smite, got into the tutorial, saw the shop, and went, nope, and left.
No! Yeah.
And I say that as somebody who used to play a lot of MOBAs.
Oh, man. So I played a lot of Smite when it first came out, and then I picked it up again a few years ago, but I also lived with my entire party, so it was really easy to organize a party of four or five and play a MOBA because it requires a lot of coordination, so it's a lot easier when you're talking to people in person. But there are a ton of different modes. Man, if you're familiar with MOBAs, you have a bunch of different characters who have different attacks that can do different things, and it's a really fun game. I just really enjoyed it. It's free.
And Smite is one that MOBA and console or MOBA and controller kind of never really meshes in most people's
minds. But it works so well with Smite.
Smite is third-person action-y style, and so it's sort of designed for that.
It's designed to be used with a controller in mind.
They really put a lot of thought into that, so I hope that works well with Joy-Con or what have you as well.
And if you do want to spend money on it, you can spend $30 and then just have access to all of the characters from now and also future characters that come out.
And that Smite is Norse theme, correct?
No, it's gods.
Oh, it's just all gods.
All different pantheons, and they're adding new gods.
So who do we got in there? We got Zeus.
Dude, there's like 50 or something right now.
We got Odin.
We got Zeus, we got Odin, Thor.
Hey, what about
Egyptian gods?
Scylla.
Anubis?
Yeah, we have Anubis. We have Horus.
What about Jesus? Is Jesus in there?
There's no Jesus.
Come on. How are you going to have a fighting game with the gods and Jesus isn't in there chopping it up?
Chopping it up?
Yeah.
Chopping it up.
That would be so good.
Exclusive day one bundle. Okay, so one thing that we absolutely have to talk about this week is that strange indirect that we're calling it. I guess it's not really that strange. They've done this kind of thing before. I just thought it was odd that this came into our world from a tweet from Nintendo UK, not even from just Nintendo America. Or like, I don't necessarily know if they went rogue or what, but they put out a great little 16-minute Indies Direct, and there's some really great stuff in it. So I wanted to kind of go game by game. I know you and I had talked about maybe doing like a reaction thing, but I think if we want to just quickly go through each of these and talk a little bit about each of them, because Tom's got a couple things he wants to talk about, Casey's got a couple games that she's revved for, and then, of course, I know that you and I could spend probably a good 15, 20 minutes on one particular
game. Oh, yeah,
game,
that's right.
Let's
you mean
start
when
with,
ski lifts go wrong.
That's right. Let's start with Wargroove, the latest from Chocolatefish.
The first Tom game in
this
list of Tom games.
The number one Tom game.
It's also a pair game.
Big sword, good doggo. That's all we need.
Yeah. So let me mention two franchises that this game takes inspiration from. Advance Wars.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
Fire
Emblem.
Ooh.
Yeah,
it's nice.
More Advance Wars.
Great.
Yes.
And this cinematic trailer makes me want to watch this anime.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you watch, so unfortunately, this if you're watching this, the cinematic trailer is just cutscenes. But if you see the game, the board looks very much like an Advance Wars game, but with the characters and the units from a Fire Emblem game. So it's kind of medieval fantasy Advance Wars with units. Like, you have ships that can fire cannonballs at riders with lances and sword fighters and all that.
Right.
And then, you have to conquer the map and vanquish your enemies.
Now, as recent NVC listeners will know, I'm legally restricted from talking about Fire Emblem ever, but I do love Advance Wars, and so this intrigues me quite a bit. And Tom, I know you're a big proponent of this game, so.
This is a game I've been watching and waiting for Same. Feels like 2 years now, and they kept saying it'll come out first quarter this year, and now they're like, oh, it's out in a week. And so
that's great. February 1st.
And the reason why I'm excited for this one is a lot of the we've had some Advance Wars clones come out of the indie community, and they have that same kind of lack of snappiness issue where it doesn't feel right when you're selecting a unit and moving it. And this one looks like it's like classic GBA, like feel snappiness board setup.
And they're going to have
2D looking when in the map mode.
They're going to have level editors too, and the whole campaign editor if you want to build your own stuff like that.
Four player, everything.
This is Chucklefish. This is actually being made by Chucklefish. They do a lot of publishing nowadays, but this is a Chucklefish game. And there you can see little drop in little like places to build your own campaigns and own maps. It's just, I think this game is going to have a long tail, as it were. There's going to be a whole campaign in it, but I think this game is going to have a lot of life after that where people are making really, really cool things because it's going to have modding on PC, too.
Day one purchase for me.
February 1st, you can purchase that game right around the corner. Let's talk a little bit about the next game, Double Kick Heroes. This is a 16-bit zombie shoot-em-up slash rhythm game?
With
question
metal.
Yeah, with a song that is very reminiscent of Judas Priest in the trailer here. This looks interesting. Anybody have any other thoughts on this?
I think this game actually came out on Steam a few years ago.
Okay.
Right? But I'm into it. I'm super into it. I like rhythm games. I'm down with metal.
Yeah, and you're doing air drums specifically in this version. So, you know, you could play drums in your room with this game, I guess.
The style's pretty cool.
Question mark?
I like the art.
Yeah, I do like the way that it looks. The music looks really cool. There's, 30 original songs, like it says right here, that are all, I presume, very metal. So that's awesome. Per, you played a bit of, what was the rhythm game with the drumming game?
Taiko?
Taiko drummer, yeah. How do you feel about this motion control drumming?
Well, I'm all about the taiko drums, so since this game doesn't come with any. I don't know. I don't play that many rhythm games unless the soundtrack or the visual presentation is super original and unique. I do like what I'm seeing here. I would love to borrow Tom's Steam login and just try it out if it's out on Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we have our own.
I was gonna
press
say, but I didn't want
to
bring it up.
You don't need to borrow Tom's. That's a little weird.
I want to borrow Tom's. I don't have one.
I mean, you run the company, so you can do what you want. next game is When Ski Lifts Go Wrong.
this game actually looks really fun.
Yeah, this is a really cool physics-based construction puzzler that has like a dash of Trials in it. It looks like
like Bridge Constructor, kind of a vibe,
right? Well,
yeah, if you ever played Polybridge. Polybridge is like, I think, one of the best bridge builders to come out in a while, and this looks very much like Ski Lift Polybridge, but with some more than that. It looks weird and cool, and I'm always good down for a good bridge builder.
Yeah. And I know my theme this week is snappiness, but some of the builder games on Switch, when they were ported, were running kind of sluggish, and so dragging nodes didn't feel right in some of the games when they came over to Switch. This looks pretty nice.
Yeah, I especially appreciate the fact that they went out of their way to say that this is a touchscreen game as well, so it looks like it's totally suited for that.
Much better to play those games with a touchscreen and be able to build stuff like
that. That's right, and When Ski Lifts Go Wrong is coming out pretty soon. It's out now, so very soon.
All right.
And I also wrote in my notes, I just want to make sure that everybody saw this, this looks like a Tom Marks game for sure.
This is probably in the lower end of a Tom game on this list. But
there's another game that's very Marxian.
How many Alcanos does it get?
There's a Tom Marks game coming up here very soon, but he didn't hear that question. How many out of five Brian Alcanos? How many Alcanos do you give this?
Five.
Oh,
you're okay. Five
that
out of
excited?
Five?
Brian will play everything. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
fair enough. Moving forward, we're talking about Forager. Of course, full disclaimer, this is a Humble Bundle published game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, that's true. We're pals with Humble Bundle over there. So,
yes, our parent company owns Humble Bundle.
That's right. But this is a really cool little 2D open world exploration game. Reminds me a little bit of a more combat focused Stardew Valley. It looks like you're building villages and spelunking and chopping stuff down and fighting enemies.
So this was the game originally was coded in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah,
that was the challenge.
There's like a demo version of it that's been out on PC for a little while.
Yep.
It looks really cute. I also think he just harvested a turnip or something and it screamed at him, "I still love you," and he harvested it. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, it's best described. Cool. They described it as like Legend of Zelda meets Stardew Valley.
Maybe so. Yeah, I think it's got a really cool art style. I like the way the boss fights look. could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
You guys interested in playing this at all?
Yeah, I loved the early build that they made, and this looks like more of that, so cool. I'm down.
This was definitely took longer than 2 weeks.
Yes.
This one here? Yeah, I assume so. The next one I don't want to spend a ton of time on, but it is Goat Simulator. Who doesn't know about Goat Simulator?
Yes.
Took the world by storm. You play as a physics-based goat.
Not a Marxian game.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I've made peace
with
Goat Simulator.
You'll allow it?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's the type of game that's funny until it isn't, right? Yeah. Like, Goat Simulator is, I'm not trying to hate on this game, because when you first play it, it is, like, maybe one of the funniest, most enjoyable experiences ever. And then eventually, you've done all the physics things, and it's just, like, not fun anymore.
So basically, this game boils down to you're tossing a goat around to try and complete objective.
Well, no, you lick things as the goat.
Your
the
tongue
lick
is,
there's also
is
your lasso. And stuff, and I guess the Switch version comes with a bunch of DLC
that's the coolest part.
I hadn't played. I haven't played any of the DLC.
The hell is that? I haven't
they
seen
that did one. A lot of DLC for this game, and some of the DLC stuff was hilarious. Like, they did this whole DLC where they pretended that they were making it into an MMO. And then they just did a goat MMO, and when you're in this DLC, you get like a little global chat with people sending messages that are just, it's just all fake. Goat Simulator MMO, they did Goat Z, they did a crossover with Payday, as you can see there. Like, they just have been going crazy with this. And that's the fun part about this game, is like doing new weird stuff as a goat.
It is, honestly, it's a great game to play with your friends when you're having a beer and you're just messing around, because it's so ridiculous. It's a game that prides itself on the bugs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, yes.
Stuff you will get stuck and things break in that game, and they love it.
And it's fine.
Yep.
Yeah. Moving on to Inmost. This is coming to us from Chucklefish and Hidden Lair. Three playable characters in a trailer that doesn't really tell us a ton about the game. Looks very spooky.
It looks,
very exploration based.
I don't really know what it is, but I want to play it.
Yeah, it looks cool.
That's all I know.
Yeah, it looks cool. Very mysterious trailer they got going on here, but the trailer ends with them saying something along the lines of, like, three playable characters through three different storylines.
Yeah,
this,
right.
So
this is, I mean, this, I feel like it looks a little bit like Octopath Traveler, where they have that traditional pixel art look, and then they put kind of modern lighting over it, and it really transforms it. Like, look how cool that looks.
Yeah. It looks very good.
It's a platformer with combat and pixels, and
it looks
gloomy. Just, like, I've already bought it.
Yeah.
I haven't, but I will.
What did you give Celeste?
A high score. I don't remember exactly.
Right.
What,
okay. Yeah. Got it.
I think it was like a 7.
Yeah.
No, it was a 10.
Yeah. He gives less a 10 out of 10. This is another Marxian tour de force.
A Tom out of Tom.
That's right.
You guys are just going to turn that into a genre.
That's right.
Yeah.
Marxian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Marxian games.
Don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
This looks great. I really want to play this.
Yeah. I'm in.
It does a really weird turn here at the end where all of a sudden it becomes very action-y.
Yep.
Which is like, oh, okay.
And there's a giant snake.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Jumps off a cliff.
So folks, if you're listening to this, look up Inmost gameplay. Just
thank
you
for that. Thank you for that. Okay, moving on. Another one coming from Magic Design Studios is Unruly Heroes. Per, you actually played this. I believe you played it with Tina at Gamescom.
You know, I didn't get to play it. There was somebody who just didn't want to give up the controller.
Now,
at
Per,
Gamescom,
you wrote the review for this game.
Yeah,
so.
I reviewed this. No, I watched this. I stood behind a man who played it and wouldn't stop playing it with his friends. It is a game, style-wise, it looks like Rayman. It looks like something Ubisoft made. It's based on the classic Chinese novel, Journey to the West, which, you know, inspired everything from the movie's Journey to the West, but also Dragon Ball, right?
And
it's
Odyssey,
a Monkey King and all
the
of
West.
That. There you go. That's
you've
right.
Ever played, a very good game.
It is a very good
ever
game.
Ever played a game with a character named Wukong in it? That's from Journey to the West.
Yeah. Right. And so you can team up. You can play this with three players and team up. And I feel like this is the closest we're going to get to Rayman Legends until Rayman Legends 2.
Yeah.
I'm sure
it
will be announced
it is
in 4 minutes. So this
given our luck,
show is already outdated.
It's happening right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous artwork and animations. I think this game looks super cool. Very interested in giving this a test run.
It looks like Lost Vikings sometimes with the puzzle.
I'm really sorry that the man didn't let you play in Germany.
Yeah, you're a mean man. Yeah. Man, you're mean.
And now on to a truly Marxian game.
Oh,
the
God.
One that Tom has been waiting to talk about since Hollow Knight arrived on the Switch.
That's not true.
Yeah. This is 2019's Hollow Knight for Tom Marx, and that's a game that we like to call CrossCode.
I wouldn't go that far. All I'm going to say is play CrossCode. CrossCode is so
I thought you were going to say play Hollow Knight. I was like, yeah, we get it, Tom.
No, CrossCode is very Secret of Mana-ish inspired. Not just
sold.
not just a rip, right? But like it does a lot different, but it's that sort of combat, that sort of perspective, that art style-ish. It is such a good RPG. This game was in early access for like a year and a half or maybe more on PC. It finally launched last year. We put it on our Game of the Year best RPG list last year.
The Steam version.
Yeah. For the PC version. We nominated it as one of the 10 best RPGs of 2018 because it is so, so good. It's like, it's got at least 100 hours of content, I'm pretty sure. Like, it is a massive RPG.
That's crazy.
And it's a blast. Justin is playing it right now too on Steam. Justin Davis, and he said when I asked you, I was like, Justin, you're playing CrossGuard, right? And he was like, oh yeah, it's the best.
Everybody this morning when we said, oh, what games got announced and the word cross quote was heard. Damon turned around. Justin's like, what?
Yeah, it's a really
Tom
good.
Tom fainted.
Can you explain the story?
So the story, without spoiling much, you're essentially like the theme in the world of the game is that there's a real world MMO, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're playing in a real world MMO.
Kind of like a dot hack situation?
Kinda, where it's like in Avatar, you take control of another body and that body is like your character in the game. So thematically, you're in an MMO playing an MMO, but there's other nefarious stuff afoot because you're trying to you've lost your memories because it's an RPG and you're trying to get your memories back. And you can't speak to start. You can only say a couple words. It's really, really cute. But thematically, what that means is that you're taking on MMO style fetch quests. You're going to MMO style hub cities. There are other NPCs who are other quote unquote players in the game running around you. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like this living world where it feels like you are actually playing an MMO, but it's completely single.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
It's super, super cool. I've never really played a single player RPG that felt like an MMO, but with a proper story and not just grinding fetch quests.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
Well, wait for April when you can play Final Fantasy XII on Nintendo Switch.
We don't have a date for CrossCode yet. It's supposed to come this year, but the Switch version is going to add some exclusive stuff that wasn't in the Steam one.
I'm bitter.
Yeah.
But yeah,
well, I mean, you can play it again. Just throw another 100 hours in there.
I haven't beaten it. It's so long.
Yeah.
But CrossCode is 100% one not to let get caught in the shuffle because there's so much good stuff coming out on Switch. But man, CrossCode is a really, really good game.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And speaking of good stuff coming out on the Switch, I'd like to introduce a new segment of the show called Pear Was Right.
Pear Was Right.
Yeah, there it is. SteamWorld Quest Hand of Gilgamesh is another game from Image and Form set in the SteamWorld universe. And it is a SteamWorld RPG, which Pear predicted many moons ago on this very show. You talked about how you wanted an Image and Form RPG.
And Brian from Image and Form looked me in the eye and said, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know what it is.
You're publicly calling him out. You know he listens to this show.
Yeah. No, that's that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're a big fan of SteamWorld Dig, maybe you're a little disappointed that you're not getting Dig 3 yet. But you can play the first one, which also released on Switch. This looks so pretty.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, consider there are other spin-offs. You know, SteamWorld Heist is not SteamWorld Dig, and it is a brilliant game.
Yeah.
And Image and Form to me is of a caliber now where they can nearly do no wrong. And I knock on wood when I say that, looking at this new thing. But, you know, everything that they've tried in the SteamWorld universe, I feel like has been a hit. And I'm really, really excited to play an RPG by these guys. I think it's going to be great.
My first impression from watching this was that it's almost Paper Mario-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you use cards as your attacks. So it's not a Hearthstone game or any card game like that.
It is a
turn-based RPG, but you use punch cards, which are your attacks, and you have to gather them and then use them in combat. So it's a little bit Paper Mario-ish. Yeah. The question is, does this game have an overworld? Is it played in a 2D perspective? Mm-hmm. Do you just walk sideways like in the classic Goemon games or something like that? We'll see.
I'm really nervous about that card system.
Yeah? Why are you nervous?
In a bad way?
I like you said, I think they're have very clearly proven that they are a developer who is worthy of being trusted, right? And doing weird things, and I'm happy that they have the freedom to do that. I generally really dislike RPG combat systems that have some sort of consumable combat thing. So Kingdom Hearts, Chain of Memories.
Baiting Kaidos.
Just hated that
combat
system.
I really liked Chain of Memories.
I
well,
could
did you
not
play
stand
Game
it.
Boy Advance or the PlayStation version?
I played the remake version.
I did too.
So
I liked it.
Yeah, I did not like that version at all. I almost completely avoided the Paper Mario ones that did that way.
Yeah.
It just, like, it doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah.
Man, I think it's all
I'm in the same boat, and when you dropped a message in our Slack channel that was like, card-based RPG. It's like,
I really like card-based RPGs.
Yeah. I'm super
into outlier there.
Well, I'm super into everything else about this game, okay. Like everything they've shown. So I'm definitely not just like writing it off, but I'm apprehensive.
So, okay. So here's how it works, right? Like some of our favorite RPGs of the past, you have a mage and you train the mage and experience points, unlock new spells. What inevitably happens is that you have one go to attack against enemies weak to fire. You have one go to attack for enemies weak to ice. And it's like, in the end, you use one move most of the time as a magic user. Mm-hmm. And so I like when there's a little bit more randomness brought into an RPG where you have to either, earn the attacks or you have to collect them. But it's also all in the balance. If they play this right and you get more and more powerful attacks as you explore and you uncover new areas, maybe certain areas have certain type of attacks. I think that whole kind of like collection and going somewhere in the world to get those cards could be really interesting.
Yeah, and I also really like deck building.
Mm-hmm.
You could deck build depending on like what kind of challenges you think you're going to face wherever you are. I just enjoy that aspect.
Well, there's also a lot of nuance to how like those systems of like we don't know if the card gets consumed when you use it. We don't know if that
looks
deck
like
will
it.
Reshuffle if it permanently is consumed. Mm-hmm. We don't know if you're unlocking cards by finding them in chests or by leveling up. Like all those questions can really influence whether
True.
That system frustrates me or is enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm not like totally writing it off and just like a little nervous.
Yeah.
No, I trust him though.
I understand that. It's a style where I feel like a lot of people on IGN as well moan when they heard about that card hook. And so it's up to these guys to prove that it works.
I have faith. I think they'll do it. I think they'll make believers out of even naysayers like Tom and I.
They haven't steered us wrong yet. And if you're still one of the holdouts that hasn't downloaded SteamWorld Dig 2.
Oh, for the love of God, you got to play SteamWorld Dig 2. Come on. What are you doing out there?
It's a top 10 game, probably a top 6 game on the Switch. You should get it.
Yeah. I love it. I love that game. I put it right here in my notes. God, I love SteamWorld. Okay. Moving right along. Speaking of games that we like to play, I'll play a little game this week.
Now, what kind of game is it?
Called Question Block.
That's not a game.
A little different approach for Question Block this week. We don't have a ton of questions, but we have two questions that I feel like will take a while to answer. So let's go ahead and jump in. Our first question comes from Corey Waite, who over on YouTube, actually, in the YouTube comments, he left this. He said, I've been really struggling with what it is I want to do professionally in my life. I'm going to be 30 in a few years, and this has been nagging at me for a while now. I sort of admire and look up to you guys for you guys because you're doing something that seems like it is a perfect fit for me, but I don't even know where to begin. I guess what I'm asking is, what helped you to get where you are today? So I kind of wanted to go round robin and talk a little bit about how we sort of fell into this career and sort of the things that led us there. So Pear, you've got the most rich history, the longest for sure. So why don't you talk to us about
thank you, the longest history. His hair looking
old,
particularly gray today. I went. I studied literature and journalism. I went abroad to study. I'm obviously not from here, so this is abroad for me. Mm-hmm. But I went to Japan and the U.S. and precisely, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I loved writing. I thought maybe journalism would be a direction I'd go in, maybe working on documentary movies. But I didn't know. So I went to universities halfway across the world to kind of find out. And then I started doing some stuff on the side in Japan. I worked for Sony Music for a while. I did like subtitling. I did some game manual work. I ended up doing an internship for the official Nintendo magazine in Germany, do one for a German news magazine, all that kind of stuff. I was like, yeah, I really like writing. I want to do something creatively. And when I lived in Japan, I got into games. And I didn't know at the time that I could make that into my own career. I started a fan site, played around with that, saw that there was an opening at a print publisher for a job and applied and got it. And then, obviously it's the early days of the internet. So, IGN happened and we spun out the company as a standalone company. it's one of the things, like, you can't predict that. I wasn't angling for that. I didn't think I'd be sitting here. I didn't think I was going to do the job that I'm doing, or that you could even make money with reviewing games either.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, it was just kind of silly.
I'm sorry.
And
are you saying you're paid for your reviews?
Yes. Yes. Activision sends me a check for all my reviews, especially games that are not made
Stop
by
it.
Activision.
Stop it. It was a bad joke.
No, none of that is true. No, but it's like, I understand. Like, when I was a teen, I had all sorts of anxiety about, like, where to go. You're now in your 30s, so you're not, you know a little bit more about the world. Think about the things that you really love doing.
Yeah.
Because there's a way. You can start a YouTube channel. You can start writing. You can figure out freelance gigs and all that stuff.
And that sort of is a great segue into my response to this question, because I get this kind of a lot. Like, I get people, and I'm sure you guys do too, reaching out on Twitter, reaching out on various platforms saying, like, how do I get to do what you're doing? And my biggest piece of advice is start doing it right now. Like, if you want to write about video games, if you want to make videos about video games, stop doing the other stuff. Like, I mean, have a job if you need to pay bills, of course, but, like, just start making that stuff, and eventually you'll find a way to make that happen as, like, something that is a viable option for you, right? Like, I studied – actually, it's kind of funny to hear you say that you studied you wanted to make documentaries, because that's where I started. I studied film and television with the express intent to go into making documentary films, and I did that for a while. I worked as a PA, a grip, a utility, a B-cam operator, a producer on all kinds of corporate and commercial projects and stuff like that for a long time. I was also a touring musician for a bit, but one of the things that was always constant in my life was video games. Like, I've always loved playing video games, and I kind of worked tertiary to this industry for a long time. You know, like, I was working these corporate gigs, but then every so often it would be like, oh, I'm going to go shoot a thing for Sony, or I'm going to go to this game launch thing and shoot interviews. And so, you know, I kind of started to weasel my way into that inner circle of, like, okay, now I know somebody at GameSpot, or now I know somebody at IGN, or now I know somebody here or there. And it just so happened that I got in tight with Nick Scarpino when he was still at IGN. I did a bunch of freelance work for him, both here in the building and elsewhere where he was freelancing also. And when he had decided to leave, he called me up and he was like, hey, I want to give you my job. Is this something that you'd be interested in doing? Do you want to come in and interview? And so it was totally a case of just the right place at the right time. I'd always wanted to work in games, but wasn't expressly sure how to do it. So I just started making inroads where I could. And then one day I got the phone call that was like, hey, we're going to pull you up to the major leagues. So,
oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Tom, what about you?
If you go back and you look at my, like, first grade, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I was literally wrote, like, I want to review games. Like,
really?
Yeah. My review, and then review changed, and that was honestly because I read IGN back then.
Oh.
But then that changed into make games, and then I went to college for game design, and then I got a job at a board game company and hated it.
What?
Just was awful. Oh, wow. I was in the sales department.
Oh,
it was
a nightmare.
That'll
do it.
And I bailed, and I got an internship at PC Gamer that led to a job at PC Gamer, which led to this job.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I learned, and I learned from talking to a bunch of other people too, throughout different industries, is, like, the do it is extremely important, but also, like, don't be afraid, especially if you don't know exactly what you want to do, like, don't be afraid to go down a different path or go down the wrong path and then be like, man, this isn't working and change, or like, I'm not into this and change. Cause like you said, the not doing is worse than, like, doing something that is not helpful.
Yeah. Totally, I think people get caught up with the idea of, like, I only want to do this one thing and everything else is terrible.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I've always wanted to work in games. It's funny you said that, because I remember freshman year of high school writing an essay about, like, how I wanted to work for Ziff Davis, publisher of EGM at the time.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I know. So full circle there. But, you know, people get so caught up on the idea of, like, I only want to do this and everything else sucks. And it's like, hey, you have to have 50 bad jobs before you can have something that you're actually into and appreciate.
I've never met a single human being who enjoyed their first job out of college ever in my life.
I worked at a Starbucks. It was awful. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, get out of your town. To me, honestly, that really helped. I grew up in a small town in Germany, and, like, I moved to the biggest city there was, Tokyo, and, like, just changed my perspective, and I discovered all these different things you could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Let's see. I got here with a lot of deliberate hard work and then a moderate amount of luck and networking.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I was in kindergarten, I wanted to be a zookeeper or a vet. And then I realized I was way too squeamish to be
a vet. Well, working on the Wookiees department, you're a little bit of both. So. Yeah,
well. But anyway, in high school, I ended up falling into journalism because they cut all of the creative writing classes except for journalism and newspaper. Sure. And then I started writing about video games for my high school newspaper. I became the entertainment editor. I really liked it. Went to school to university for magazine journalism. Junior year of college, I was like, I'm going to do something in my field, because up to that point, I had just been working at GameStop. And I got a position as a copy editor and then news director at my university's radio station. I produced a weekly live video game show. I interned at Gamer Magazine over here in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and realized, like, if I wanted to work in this industry, I had to move here. Mm-hmm. But I continuously went to industry events like PAX, and I just talked to people and I made friends with them. And I constantly, is any time an opportunity would come my way, I would take it, no matter what it was. Even if I didn't think I was perfect at it, I would just do it. Mm-hmm. And I spread my talents a lot. Instead of just focusing on writing, I took a video editing class. I did radio. I did a lot of brand ambassador jobs. I just did a ton of different things and kind of to see what stuck.
Yeah.
And eventually I got let go from my marketing job at a healthcare company. And that's right when you guys were looking for a Pokemon Wiki freelancer.
Perfect.
Who I got in contact with Sam with was someone who I met during my internship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean,
wikis are a great way in for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we have some wiki contributors that we know by name, you know. Tig, for example, awesome work on all that.
Yeah,
Smash
thank
Brothers
you so
editing.
Much.
Freaking awesome. But those are the people that when they call you up, they're not cold calling you anymore, right?
Yeah.
When they're applying for your job, you're like, oh, you did all that? Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
I think the bottom line is sort of keep your eyes and ears open. Mm-hmm. Stay optimistic. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, in whatever job you have, ask yourself the question, like, which of these skills applies to my end goal? Like, what can I take from this job that might help me get to the next level?
And like, also, I think one of my biggest pieces of advice I give to people is, like, get good at the skill that you want to do about the topic. You can't just love video games. You have to be good at something that you can apply to video games.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and if you really, really want a job in the industry, just DM Pear.
You get a job and you get it. No.
Okay, we have time for one more question. Dan said that we only have 2 minutes, but I think we're going to be a little bit late to this voice meeting. I'm sorry. And this is a handwritten letter.
Oh,
we get so few of these.
Snail mail.
I didn't, and we can talk about that in a bit. Okay. This is from.
It had fan art on it.
It had fan art on it. This is Matt from Madison, and he says, hey, NVC crew. I think IGN needs a Nintendo editor. I know you were burned by your last one, but given the success of the Switch, the last 2 years seems like prime time where a Nintendo editor is needed. Not only could that editor host NVC full time, but games that are not currently being reviewed by IGN, fitness boxing, he says in parentheticals, could get a review. Where is IGN with getting a new Nintendo editor? So this is kind of an uncomfortable question for us, but it's one that we've been asked a lot, especially in the last 6 months or so. So I humbly went to Pear and I said, can we ask this question on the air? I want to talk a little bit about it to the audience.
Of course.
And go ahead, take it away.
We're not planning to hire a Nintendo editor right now. And the reason for that is we shifted some of the positions at IGN into kind of platform-specific positions. We brought on Tom at the time as our PC editor. And, you know, with Tom here, we realized Tom doesn't just play PC games. He plays games on every platform. And so we kind of felt like maybe right now is not the time to have an editor dedicated to each platform. And rather kind of, go for a more general setup because it allows us to be a little bit more flexible. What can happen with any of these platforms is you've got an Xbox editor sitting there and then no Xbox exclusives come out for like 4 months or 5 months. I don't know what was that before Forza. There was a long time before we got something for the Xbox. And so, you know, that, well, there's value in having kind of like an ambassador or somebody who knows that platform so well as a company. That constantly has to fight for its resources probably wasn't the best setup for the time. Mm-hmm. So never say never, right? We might go back to having platform leads in the future again, but right now that's not what we're going for.
In terms of this show, I think we're looking at 2019. in a very sort of holistic kind of organic way in that, you know, we want different people to host the show. We want a steady panel of NVC cast members that can rotate and be in the hot seat, but as well as comment on the things that we're talking about on a week-to-week basis. Like, there's a new Monster Hunter game coming out for the Switch. Casey's going to host that week. If there's a new Zelda or Mario thing, like Metroid, that's going to be me or Pear or Brian or, you know, if there's some kind of crazy bridge builder game that is the hottest thing in the world, Tom might host and get over in the hot seat. But
his favorite genre is bridge building.
The only thing that he plays. Yeah.
How do these things happen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Put that in Wikipedia, please.
That's right. Put it on the Tom Marks wiki. So, I think that 2019 will be an interesting year for this show because we might have a lot of like rotating hosts, but we have a core cast that is dedicated to bringing the absolute very best Nintendo coverage that we can. And in terms of like what that might mean for our relationship with Nintendo, I think we're doing fine. Like, I think I'm serious. Like, we've always had one dedicated person that is like the bridge to Nintendo, and now that person is Pear.
What?
So, yeah. I mean,
how's that my job now?
Well, I mean, that's what else are you doing all day?
That's
yeah.
Right. No, yeah.
So, I would like to say that I'm sorry that it's taken us so long to answer these questions. Like, a lot of people have asked this thing, but like, ultimately, I don't think any of us were really certain what the future looked like for this position until pretty recently. So,
And we're looking at some things. You know, we're on the tech and engineering side. We're working on a major
tech and engineering product.
We're working on some major upgrades to our infrastructure. Right, it's a website that's existed for more than 20 years. Like, it's like cities built on top of the ruins of cities. Right, certain like you build something new in the upper left corner and something old breaks in the lower right corner. And so we're working on some overhauls there, and we hope that we can introduce some new cool community features this year as well, and we might need a little staffing help on that end, so we'll see what's next.
Right on. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'd like to thank Matt for writing in handwritten letter. Very nice.
Thank you.
So few of those that we get these days. And I want to thank each of you guys for being on the panel this week. Thank you so much for coming to talk about
these fun topics.
And thank you guys for watching. Remember, we are NVC IGN's Nintendo show every Thursday at 3 p.m. on nvc.ign.com and every Friday at 3 p.m. on youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. Next week, we'll be back. We'll be talking about more Nintendo stuff. Tom might be here to talk about some bridge builder game. Who knows? But I do know that this is the only place next week that you'll be able to
get the thing.
Get the thing.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.